Welcome back. You're watching Taking Stock, or Stock Watch rather, with me, Alicia Seckham, this evening, and tackling your questions in studio this evening, Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective and Ian Cruickshanks from the SA Institute of Race Relations as well. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us in studio this evening. So, let's start off with you, Ian. What's fueling sentiment on your side at the moment? Comments from Trump around the US-China striking a deal sooner rather than later, or developments in an inquiry into Trump's impeachment? It seems like depending on which market you're looking at in a particular geography, we've got a different factor driving sentiment today.
Mr. Trump's ability to maintain concentration on any one avenue leads me to saying it's going to be a highly volatile area, you know, for the foreseeable future. And I think that this is something, it's actually quite worrying. But we have to live with that, and we've got to adapt to strategies which take this into account. Constantly changing financial environments, not just the markets, but in every aspect of the economies which make up the world's, you know, sector at the moment. So, I find it very disturbing almost, what with his ongoing battle with the Chinese and with everybody else who dares to gainsay him, and Brexit at the same stage. It's a very troubled environment which affects my outlook on markets all over.
Graham, that being said, and knowing the kind of persona you're having to deal with right now, is it all just noise and bluster until something concrete emerges, or has it really rattled you?
A lot rattles me. But I think it depends on how you look at it. I think Trump is fundamentally a populist. I think he thinks that he's smarter than everybody else and he can single-handedly fix America. I think his view of make America great, and you can see the pressure that he's applying to Jerome Powell, cut interest rates, do what everybody else is doing. I think is almost, when I say desperate effort, I think the U.S. naturally is on its way into a recession.
Yes.
And that's not a recession is not a four-letter word. You don't have to sort of avoid it at all costs. So, but you don't want to be heading into a recession or you know, slowly moving towards it in with November 2020 coming up. So my sense of it is that Trump talks very brave, but the Chinese have actually pushed back. And my sense is he's actually retreating a little bit at the moment. And that's why he's putting out all these tweets about, there's a lot of progress. I think the reality is the Chinese are saying, well, truthfully, we don't have an election to fight in a year's time. You do have an election to fight. You've already caused us economic pain, so we'll just push back. But the paradox about all of this is Huawei has now got 5G masts that have no U.S. components. Now, if that's his definition of an economic victory and making America great, I think he's missing a point. So the whole monologue is around the fact that I think in many ways the world is saying, you know what, let's just tolerate him for another year, and if we're really lucky, we don't have to deal with it for a year from now.
Despite the world saying that, though, as Ian said, it's fueling a whole lot of volatility in the interim and making it hard to focus. And one of the questions that has come through this evening is, in the context of someone being new to trading, they want to buy a couple of shares. How do they pick?
So I think if you're trading, my sense is that markets have taken quite a beating. You look, I did some analysis about just over a week ago, and whether you look on a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, or 5 year view, roughly 70% of the all share constituents, and obviously there were more, or there are more now than there were 5 years ago, are down on a 5 year view. Now, I see that those as odds where you can actually start making money. Trading, this is actually a great trader's market. Take companies like the big banks. They are moving quite wildly in bands. Earlier today, you could have picked up British American Tobacco for 517 Rand odd, closed at 540. So ironically, if you're a trader, this is a fantastic market. Donald Trump is your best friend. But if you're buying good stocks with fundamental stories at the lower end of their bands, I think you can make money. And if you're a longer-term investor, let's assume he's not a trader or she is not a trader per se, this is a wonderful time to be coming into the market. You know, a bad time to come into the market was 5 or 6 years ago. So ironically, I actually see the, all this Trump noise and Brexit and the chaos and the risk off and risk on as wonderful opportunities, because a lot of people are saying, listen, until I understand the rules of the game, I'm sitting it out. And I'm saying, you know what, Standard Bank will still be around after Trump has gone, quite frankly.
I'd just like to make one, sorry, if I'm comment if I may, and that is, what worries me is that with this constant negativity that we have at the moment, there's no new capital investment, very little. There's no new development. There are no new jobs being created in South Africa. And all things considered, I can see the possibility that we bounce along at the lower level of this band that we've got to now, and maybe this the base becomes a new peak, a new high level, and that worries me, that it can just carry on like that. There's plenty of time. If you're a trader, one must realize what the challenges are and what the risks are. For this person who's new to the investment market, I'd say take your time and make sure that you look for bottoms and pick them very carefully, and don't commit all your capital at once.
Mm, absolutely. Agreed. And in that chase for capital, you know, picking the bottom and for quality at the end of the day, let's hone in on Capitec. Of course, out with a stellar set of numbers today, it continues with this very positive momentum. You were at the presentation, yes. Ian. Overall sense on Capitec right now?
I'm convinced the management is as good as possible as we possibly can get in the banking sector. And I think the banking sector has some very responsible management. Responsible, are they? Have they grown so fast that you'd say that's not in the realm of responsibility? I think it is. I think they've got started at a time when they could have, they have mechanized everything. They really have computerized every aspect of their business. They have less, they have, the only additional people they have are those who are encouraging their colleagues to come and become clients of Capitec.
If not clients, employees. It's the only player that's actually hiring amidst it all.
That's right, and considerable numbers too. Why? Because they are definitely growing the business, and they want to know that they have insight into every aspect of their clients' business when they come to them. And that's another good point. They are at least improving their business banking potential as well. And that's encouraging to see. So I would say, I'm not going to go rushing into it. There can't be a hurry right now, especially just after the results. But it's a stock to pick up at times when you feel that you can't stand having that cash form of a load in your pocket. And in any long-term portfolio, it needs a stake there.
Yeah. Capitec, of course, coming out year after year with these enviable earnings, yes. Graham. Question out there, can it be sustained, especially on account of the competition that's heading its way, which is in the, you know, the low-cost space overall, the likes of your Time Bank, Discovery Bank, etc.?
The short answer, I believe, to that question is no. I don't think they're going to maintain earnings growth at 20%. I hear, Ian, business banking, but, you know, Sasfin is now getting its business banking going. And it's one thing having the offering, you need the balance sheet. I mean, Capitec themselves really have not moved into asset-backed lending and stuff like that. So I think the short answer is they've done a fantastic job at attracting transactional customers. And I think, as Harry said earlier today, people think that all 12 million customers are microloan customers. That for every current account they've, or every 12 current accounts, they've got basically one borrower. The thing that worries me about the model is they've capitalized, they've done a brilliant job, big data, rolling out, attacking a segment of the market. But I said earlier today, Caesar is dead, long live Caesar. So they've disrupted the market. But Time Bank, you're talking about low fees. We're now going into a world of no fees. And I think the fight will be taken to them. A lot of good things in their results. 91% of their operating expenses are covered by transaction costs, yes, and funeral policies. The problem is that if people stop using them and start canceling those policies, suddenly that 91% evaporates. So the short answer for me is I think there's going to be a lot of competition in that low fee market. I think you're going to get a lot of disruptive pricing. You're going to get a lot of disruptive thinking. And I think they are more vulnerable if if somebody says, okay, well, we've now got a full suite, and they come to market with more products quicker than they have, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliantly run business. I agree 100% with Ian. They've done a fantastic job. They saw a niche in the market. They've gone out. They've captured it. The one thing that worries me is when you look at their balance sheet, they've got almost as much sitting on cash and overnight and in money market funds and in the interbank market as they've got lent out to customers, if that makes sense. So there's massive capital and liquidity buffers there, which is healthy,
yes.
But it's sterile, and it tells you they haven't really got much to do with it. So my sense is the days of 20% earnings growth are gone. I think it's going to be difficult for them to move the needle, and a 28 multiple really does
That's
scare
quite
me.
High.
Okay.
So just one point, they take over a mercantile bank. He said that they expected confirmation, finally, that regulators will say it's all in order within a couple of weeks. Mm. Now, that could usher in a whole new state of business, area of business, I think, you know, in the small to medium-sized business, entrepreneurial business sector.
Okay. Before we leave the financial space, Zarclear published on the JSE SENS in August that they've acquired equity in African Phoenix Investments, formerly African Bank Investments. Would the panel recommend a long position in either of these two companies? Zarclear, we just searched ahead of coming live on
the
air.
Old Sandown Capital,
the old Sandown Capital.
I don't have a real feel for it. African Phoenix, a lot of hard work has been done. The balance sheet is repositioned. Although when I walk past or I hear radio, or past the branches and I hear radio ads about, you know, we offer 13% deposit rates, I get a little anxious, but I'm old-fashioned that way. I can't really comment on either of them. But I think it is, coming back to our original opening discussion, there are interesting opportunities for people that are insightful and people who are brave.
And Peregrine was you know, at the forefront of introducing mathematics and algorithms into the outlook on banking and finance. And I think that they were very clever, but they did well, and they also did not do well in some years. So it's a very volatile result situation. I would be wary of it. I don't think it's in any danger, but you know, you may not get an Apache record of profitability.
Yeah. Well, let's hit pause on the conversation now. It's time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back, and it's time to check in on what international markets are up to right now. As you can see, stateside, we've got indices still trading in the red, S&P 500 pulling back 0.33%, the Nasdaq 0.75% in the red, and the Dow pulling back 0.33% as well. Across the Atlantic, in the meantime, we had a more positive picture playing itself out. FTSE 100 trading 0.8% higher, the CAC 40 gaining 0.66%, and the DAX 0.4% to the good. Still with me in studio, Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective and Ian Cruikshanks from the SA Institute of Race Relations. We were chatting in the break, Graham, about potential alternative views that investors can start adopting right now, given where valuations sit. And an interesting one for you is African Rainbow Capital.
Yeah, so the reason I'm going with that is, or talking about that is it is very much the disruptor. It's a new kid on the block. They've got to obviously add another 1.3 million clients or whatever before they get break even. But there was already a lot of traction. They've got the whole Pick and Pay franchise out there. Very little friction to open accounts, very attractive interest rates. So you're buying African Rainbow Capital, depending on what value you want to put on Rain and so forth, you're buying it at roughly about a 50% discount to net asset value. So you've got TymeBank in there. It's not a massive value component. You've got some very interesting assets. So that might, for somebody who says, well, maybe Capitec, you know, it's done its thing. I'm not sure I want to go the Phoenix route. Have a look at that one. I think it could be an interesting play. It gives you a lot of other things, but disruptive financial services and disruptive technology.
And close to a 50% discount to NAV. I mean, that's very high. That says a lack of confidence in management, and I don't think that's warranted.
No. Yeah. Okay, so an interesting one there. Talking about disruptors, what's your view on Discovery? And particularly, Graham, this question for you. Do you still think Discovery is a good buy?
I think it's a great buy.
look,
I mean, obviously the NHI came along, markets have been shaken. a lot of selling of South African assets. There's been a lot of angst in China and Hong Kong. So it's been the perfect storm to hit them. I still think it is a brilliantly run business. Talk about a captive audience. So, you know, now if you're a Discovery Vitality member, you're going to have to open a bank account in order to redeem your Discovery miles. Now, that's a pretty powerful selling point. So I'm thinking, okay, do I open a Time Bank? Do I open a Bank Zero? Do I open a Capitec? And if I'm a Discovery client, I'm pretty much going to be forced into that. So, but the model is just working. You know, everything they've started, barring the very early days in the US, that didn't work. Yeah. Everything else. They start it, they commit capital, give it a 2, 3, 4 years, and it turns around. Doesn't matter where it's invest, insure, Ping An, all of these things are starting to kick into gear. I think it's a brilliantly placed business.
And just looking at the capital commitments it is making, though, it had unnerved some for a while in terms of the extent to which it's plowing into its offshore ambitions, given rand levels at this point, and then obviously starting up with the bank as well. Are any of those concerns warranted in your books, Ian?
I think perhaps they're being overly concerned, but if you look at the graph of it that we saw a moment ago there, that drop below, I think it was about 140 Rand. The drop below there just says there's a significant change in sentiment over the short term. And that is a bit worrying. Is there something that we don't know about? I would wait to see if that turned up before wanting to make a move to them.
Okay, so some caution coming through there. Yeah. How cautious are you on Sibanye Stillwater? Is it still a buy or have we missed the bus?
I think the sector is for trading, not for investing. Considering the recent move, no, I would not be a buyer.
Not a buyer.
I'm not a gambler. Yes, I have to say that right.
How much of a gambler are you, Graham?
I think I'm worse at trading than I am at gambling, and I'm a really lousy gambler. So, obviously they've put together a very interesting, from a kind of a second-rate gold stock to massive platinum producer. I still have fundamental concerns about the platinum market, and the South African guys are still principally platinum, especially if you do see a big kick-up in electric vehicles, and if that coincides with trade wars and a general slowdown economically. So the platinum stocks have run like anything. My sense is they're probably ahead of the fundamentals. I would just sit it out, and of course, you got industrial action coming in that sector, yeah, particularly for them. So, yeah.
That, of course, is something that's inherent with the South African mining sector at the moment. Let's take a look at Blue Label Telecoms. It's become synonymous with Cell C. I still hold Blue Label. What do I do now? Do I cut my losses at this point, or am I sitting in a situation where it really can't get much worse?
My view would be it's a bad situation. Turn around and start again somewhere else.
Cut your losses.
They say your first loss is your worst loss. Well, you've passed the stage of first losses, but it's continually breaking down and finding new areas of poor performance. No, it's cost the group a huge amount. Leave it alone.
It's cost the group a huge amount. It's a group that's now sitting with significant amount of debt, but that's looking to sell off assets in an effort to pay off those debts.
Yeah.
Does that bolster any confidence for you, Greg?
I haven't liked the story at all, particularly on the Cell C story. Having said that, the core business, the seller of airtime, of prepaid packs, of electricity, those results look good.
Yes.
I think they're sitting with Cell C in their books at a princely zero. I think there are refinance options on the table, and if that fails, my guess is somebody like MTN will probably come in as the white knight. So I have a slightly different view. You have been thumped really hard. The core business that has always been there still is trading reasonably well. I would wait a little while. You know, if you've come from 15 Rand to 3, it's almost like if somebody said to you 2 years ago you can buy an option on this thing, your premium is 3 Rand, that guy would probably have taken it. So I would personally not cut now. I would just wait and see what happens.
Okay. And Blue Label, quite emphatic about the fact today that, the move that it's pursuing right now is to protect what you've highlighted, its core business of distributing prepaid airtime and electricity, and it's going to use proceeds to pay off debt in order to ring fence that. Of course, few questions coming through here. My investment strategy is to buy low and sell high with a view to multiplying investment in 6 to 12 months. To reduce risk, I prefer to ensure the company has liquidity, should deal with its current loss problem, is not adversely affected by our economy, example exports, and has an excellent chance of improving profitability. In this regard, I'm enjoying the Impala run and would like to find similar opportunities.
Are those so
becoming few and far between, Ian?
Yes. You know, yes, that's an excellent laid out strategy. You know, very sound and methodical, and that's fine. To say here's a company that fits all of those all at once is rather difficult.
Yeah.
I suppose you sort of now delving into the world of companies like Bidcorp, not product obviously, yeah, services and maybe the Richemonts. But what I would, another filter I would put on that is the price you pay. So, you know, it's no good you go and pay a 30 multiple for somebody who's going to grow their profits at 10%, because you're not going to get much of an unwind. And I think the strategy makes a lot of sense, but I think, as Ian was saying right at the beginning, you know, it's a very difficult time. Rather than feeling compelled to go and put your money, so it's almost like finding the best of a bad bunch. If you can't find somebody that ticks those boxes, once you put everything through a filter, just leave it alone, because otherwise you're gonna end up taking the second stringers.
Yeah. There was a second part to that email. Murray and Roberts, as well as Avenge, are not operating in the South African construction sector any longer. They've procured work outside the country, have good management, and disposed of non-profit-making operations. Could your panel please comment on these two companies, as well as identify any other such opportunities? So let's first tackle Murray and Roberts. How are you feeling about it?
I feel they're on a survival course. Yes, they probably will survive, but it's going to take a long time before they shine again. And I think this, to me, is overhanging the whole of that construction civil sector. And I would tend to say the margins on which they're operating are paper thin. Mm. Really, there's no room for error. And they will inevitably make some errors still. I just think...
Well, they've made very big errors, I think, in Australia.
Sure. To grow out of that situation, it's going to take a long time, and it might be very unrewarding in the interim.
Yeah. Graham, Murray and Roberts, for you?
I find the two questions almost contradictory. So on the one hand, we want, you know, predictable businesses with good management. Good management don't mess up perfectly viable companies. So I think... there's a lot of optionality, and you've still got Aeton hanging around there, and probably you've got an embedded put on them. So I suppose out of the two, that one looks quite interesting. But, you know, there's some interesting businesses that have also been hit hard. We were talking about Discovery earlier. I mean, obviously very, very exposed to SA Inc., but I think 5 years from now, it won't be anywhere near as exposed. I think trying to find these sort of 10 baggers in 6 months is a dangerous strategy in this environment. I would rather just steer clear of it.
Yeah. Steer clear of it along with Avenge?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Yes.
More so.
It's a sector that counts.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a look at multi-choice. Putumanati shareholders have been offered the opportunity to convert 20% of their shares to multi-choice shares. Should I do this? Which are better? Multi-choice is easier to trade, but Putumanati has a fantastic dividend. What should I do today? Multi-choice, the worst performer on the top 40 index, falling back 2.3%.
I'm not that informed on the sector. It's an interesting long-term sector, undoubtedly. There's no chance, no concern about that. But I just don't like its performance, share performance in the recent past.
Yeah.
So I think when we got our multi-choice out of NASPAS, we basically sold them immediately. It looked like a mistake early on, but we're taking the view that there's got to be downward pressure. They're going to have to rejig those packages. There's a lot of competition in the streaming space. So I would probably argue wherever you can get the best liquidity, I would go there. And you know, although I adore discounts to net asset value when it locks you in and gives you an inability to actually trade, then it becomes counterproductive. So I would, all things being equal, I haven't followed it closely enough of late, but I would probably rather convert, get the liquidity and actually look to exit, because you'll probably find the investors got proportionally quite a lot of money sitting in that.
Okay. On that note, let's shift focus to your respective stock picks this evening. Ian, what's yours?
I would look certainly in dollar terms for an ETF on the U.S. corporate bond market. I think that we're going to see rates cut even further, and I think that that is going to mean a surge in liquidity globally. That will have a big impact on that sort of market. And it may be quite interesting that it may be the only really performing game in town.
Okay. Graham, on your side?
Yeah, so I've called Ethos Capital many times. If you look at the share price, you'd say, well, there's evidence he has no idea what he's doing.
Come on.
It started at $10, and today it was got hit very late to 7-11.
It's all about how you pitch it, Graham.
Yeah. So I think... they released results earlier today, net asset value R11.39, so let's forget the 7.11, that was a bit of an anomaly. Even at 7.25, 7.30, it's sitting on approaching a 40% discount. Yeah. It's not like the underlying portfolio is ridiculously valued. I think EBITDA multiple in the portfolio 6.9, comfortable levels of gearing. But for somebody who says, okay, well, I believe in the Africa SA story and that good capital allocators in the private equity space will continue to do well, I think this team ticks those boxes. You get underlying exposure to many different funds and a portfolio of companies in one instrument, and you must get the free pen in the 35% discount. So I think I can see no reason why this company, frankly, should trade on more than a 15% discount. So theoretically, you could get a 20% kicker there. What's also interesting is that a lot of the investee companies are very fresh, so they haven't even been able to revalue them. You look at a company like Channel Vast, which we understand is trading very well, so you could get a real kicker. I think it's a fantastic investment opportunity.
On that note, let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Graham Koerner is with Koerner Perspective, and Ian Cruickshanks is with the SA Institute of Race Relations. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening. Let's shift focus to your respective stock picks this evening. Ian, what's yours?
I would look certainly in dollar terms for an ETF on the U.S. corporate bond market. I think that we're going to see rates cut even further, and I think that that is going to mean a surge in liquidity globally. That will have a big impact on that sort of market. And it may be quite interesting that it may be the only really performing game in town.
Okay. Graham, on your side?
Yeah, so I've called Ethos Capital many times. If you look at the share price, you'd say, well, there's evidence he has no idea what he's doing.
Come on.
It started at $10 and today it was got hit very late to 7-11.
It's all about how you pitch it, Graham.
Yeah. So I think they released results earlier today, net asset value R11.39. So let's forget the 7-11, that was a bit of an anomaly. Even at 7.25, 7.30, it's sitting on approaching a 40% discount. Yeah. It's not like the underlying portfolio is ridiculously valued. I think EBITDA multiple in the portfolio 6.9, comfortable levels of gearing. But for somebody who says, okay, well, I believe in the Africa SA story and that good capital allocators in the private equity space will continue to do well, I think this team ticks those boxes. You get underlying exposure to many different funds and a portfolio of companies in one instrument, and you must get the free pen in the 35% discount. So I think I can see no reason why this company, frankly, should trade on more than a 15% discount. So theoretically, you could get a 20% kicker there. What's also interesting is that a lot of the investee companies are very fresh, so they haven't even been able to revalue them. You look at a company like Channel Vast, which we understand is trading very well, so you could get a real kicker. I think it's a fantastic investment opportunity.
On that note, let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Graham Koerner is with Koerner Perspective, and Ian Cruickshanks is with the SA Institute of Race Relations. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening.